Just some reaction to stuff in the last hour. This is in relation to our conversation with Rihanna. I wish there was something like this around when I was younger. I was always told I was bold, but after getting a late diagnosis, I finally know I wasn't. And I, obviously, as you can imagine, through sitting in this chair, have spoken to a lot of adults who got a diagnosis in their 20s or sometimes 30s of ADHD, and everything began to make sense for them. And they could have had a far, I won't use the word better, but perhaps a less stressful or smoother pathway through education if they had known early on. Re-assisted dying, can I ask what mental health checks are done when it comes to assisted dying? Well, I presume from my cursory look at what's happening in Switzerland, it's to make sure that you are of sound mind and not under duress in making that decision. As you heard, quite interesting, a lot of people opting for assisted dying in Switzerland are ladies in their 80s with one or two co-morbidity issues. Is that how they describe it? So that's an interesting element of what's happening over there. I'm joined on the programme now by Claire Mangan, founder of Beyond Surviving. Beg your pardon, Kira. Kira Mangan. Good morning, Kira. Sorry about that. Good morning to you.
No problem. Good morning.
You founded Beyond Surviving off the back of your own experience, Kira. As much as you are comfortable, just to help us to get to where we are now, what was that experience and what deficits were there that you felt needed filling?
Yeah, so I founded Beyond Surviving on the back of achieving justice in the Criminal Courts of Justice. In 2023, I would have availed of all the Rape Crisis Centre services and frontline crisis services counselling for about 12 years. And then once I achieved justice, I turned to the support worker at the time in the courts, and I just said, I suppose, where do I go now? I was kind of looking for another service beyond traditional approaches such as counselling or therapeutic work. But I was told that there was nothing really after and that it was time for me to go and heal on my own. So I didn't really think too much about it. Well, I did, but I didn't think too much of it. I just really couldn't believe that that could be true. So I spent the next few weeks or whatever looking online and looking for survivor groups and looking for that next step for my healing beyond the traditional rape crisis centres, which didn't exist. So I set up my own charity.
And
Beyond
Kira,
Surviving, which addresses that gap.
And is this specifically sort of post-trial? Because obviously, you know, I've spoken to many people who are campaigning maybe for you know, for changes to how the trials are conducted, for an example. So is this, do you find Beyond Surviving, or is it specifically for people after the trial, potentially after a conviction, and sort of that void? Or does it, do you find people accessing the charity before then?
Yeah, so it's having a criminal conviction or anything going through the courts or anything is not a prerequisite to engaging in our services. But you do have to be at a stage where you've done a lot of your trauma processing and you're not in that, I suppose, crisis stage in your journey where you maybe are extremely absorbed by your story, still processing it. Beyond Surviving is really for survivors who have progressed beyond their traumatic experience to an extent where they're looking to connect with other survivors, for example. And many of our survivors that are engaging in our services are actually women. The main age cohort is women aged 55 and above. We've even had one woman come to our support groups. She was 80. And these women are coming, having navigated their healing and recovery journeys alone for decades. Because sexual violence is most commonly perpetrated against young women, that's the statistics that we're working off. And of course, it's not in every instance. But these women would, in their younger years, avail of the crisis intervention services, such as the rape crisis centres. But the people coming to Beyond Surviving are decades beyond that. So most of our service users are women, 55 to 60 or above.
Now,
80 years old,
obviously,
so
Ciara, some people might be, you know, amongst a friends group or family or in the work environment, and there'll be a mixture in there, presumably, of those who know that the person was a victim of a crime and those that don't. But of those that do, have we anything to learn as a society as to how we treat people? Like, is there a sense that, oh, that was 3 or 4 years ago, get over it now, or that in some way it's trivialised? Or is there a, from the people, from your own knowledge and those that have accessed the charity, is there any learning there that we could sort of get in this conversation?
Yeah, 100%. So Beyond Surviving exists because the impact of domestic and sexual violence persists for a lifetime. It never goes away. You grow around it and you do get stronger around it, but it stays with you forever. So we exist because healing and recovering from these crimes is a lifelong process, and we deserve to have support at every stage of our healing and recovery journeys, not just when we essentially survive or get a criminal conviction. It doesn't end there. It stays with you forever. And it, you know, what we're seeing in Beyond Surviving is that it's so true. These women are coming and they've been assaulted or sexually abused, you know, decades before, and they still are impacted by this crime. So, you know, it doesn't go away.
And we know, and too, the prevalence, Ciara, of you know, rape, sexual assault, domestic abuse. There's so many women that are carrying this with them in the exact way you've just described, internalising it, trying to live around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, I set up Beyond Surviving because I genuinely felt like a broken record all the time, harping on about the same thing that happened 12 years ago. And you eventually just stop talking about it because you feel like you're a burden on other people. And I said, surely I can't be the only survivor who just can't get past this. And why does it still impact me? So I just needed that resonance with other survivors. And, you know, we've worked with 153 survivors this past year, in our first year, really. And They're all they ask for is just to connect with people who just truly understand, where you don't have to explain what happened. You don't have to explain why you still feel this 30, 40, 50 years after it happened. It doesn't go away. And that's all survivors really want, is just to connect with one another and to feel that solidarity, that they're not crazy.
But even for some, Ciara, it would be something of an unburdening. Do you know, say, for instance, you were that lady in your 70s or 80s, and I know it's not exclusively that, but you may well have gone through your entire working life, raised children, have grandchildren, and never really been able to, not unburden as if it makes it go away, but actually speak freely to somebody else about your experience and the impact it had on you. I can only imagine what that must feel like for someone who potentially has contained that within themselves for, and it could be child sexual abuse too, I presume, that have they've had to carry that with them alone.
Yeah, you've really hit it on the head there, because some survivors have actually come to Beyond Surviving and they've said that they were assaulted in their younger years and now they're, you know, 60, whatever. And they just said that it's a time before where even more shame existed in society. But a lot of them say that, you know, motherhood saved them, that they just had a different mission in their life. And when their kids came along, nothing else mattered other than them. And they just kind of pushed what happened to them down and down and down. And once those children have now gone to college, or they've moved out, or they've, you know, got their own children now these women are coming to Beyond Surviving and they're saying, I'm ready now to dedicate time to me, and this still exists in my life, it's still an issue for me, and it's still something I want to work through. And now they're coming to Beyond Surviving. So it's an incredibly rewarding place to work. It's really interesting, and it's just sad as well. Like, it never goes away. So if I can just create a charity like this where those women can come together and just understand each other and connect with one another, it's just, you know, makes my heart happy.
I can imagine too, and there's still a lot of work to do in relation to the judicial system. We've talked quite extensively here on this show about survivors cancelling notes in sexual offence trials being used against them. As we talk, people are texting in. Do you know what? I'm going to read this text. And I think it's important actually sometimes. A woman or fella, but a woman should be able to pass out in a park completely vulnerable and for people to come along and protect that person or whatever. And the reason I'm saying that is because there's a couple of texts suggesting that intoxication has featured in some of these defences. The person responsible will always be the person that commits the sex crime. And that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. But there still is this attitude out there that seems to want to blame people for putting themselves in a position. But as I say, quite clumsily, if a person is in a vulnerable position or has found themselves in that, that is when good people protect that person, not exploit it, and then in some way blame them. And I find it hard to believe that we're still in that conversational space where that's not the obvious answer to any question. Nobody brings this on themselves. There is the perpetrator who decides that person is either vulnerable or not and makes that decision. And you know, that's, we should never lose focus of that, Kira, but there is still some people that victim blame for some reason.
Yeah, victim blaming is rife. But I mean, it's even done through our courts. I mean, in all fairness, the character references are forms of victim blaming as well, because you're literally just sitting there listening to them harp on about how good a person he was. We're not here to discuss that at all. This person has been convicted in court. It doesn't matter if he carried in the shopping for a woman 20 years ago, or in my case, goes to the gym 6 days a week. That's the kind of nonsense that you have to listen to in court. So, I mean, we have a lot of work to do. And you know, sometimes it's the bare minimum that we have to do. Even, you know, yesterday I read that women and men are still not paid equally for doing the same jobs. Like, that's just such a basic thing. Like, there's just the bare minimums are still not being done, and it just blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah. And also just back to that point, there is amongst some men, and none of us are perfect, but I'm going to say men in particular here, they get defensive in conversations like this as if we're talking about all men, right? When that's clearly not the case. No. But I think some of those comments sometimes are driven by men feeling like this is an attack about men and forgetting what we're actually talking about, and that's victims. How do people get more information about Beyond Surviving, Kira?
Beyondsurviving.ie is our website, and it's the same handle as well for our social media.
And is it primarily networking and peer-to-peer support, Kira? Is that the workings of it primarily?
Yes. So it's survivor support groups. We also support survivors to engage in their own advocacy as well, to advocate for themselves. It's a really powerful form of healing where you can use your voice and your experiences to shape change. And it's not for every, advocacy is not for every survivor. But then also we do raise a lot of awareness about the need for services after frontline crisis sector services. There's a huge gap there. So that's a lot of our own advocacy and awareness raising work would be the long-term needs that do evolve as survivors progress through their healing and recovery journeys. We have new needs as we progress.
Yeah.
A lot of us, you know, would really struggle with a sense of identity, having, you know, lost it in the fight for survival for decades on end. I mean, it took me 7 years to put one person away for five. Mm. So in those 7 years, you're not really living, and you lose every aspect of yourself. You lose your passions, you lose everything, because you're just constantly waiting for a trial and waiting for, you know, living in survival. Yeah. So, you know, and imagine those survivors after as well, having, you know, prioritized motherhood for for like 18 plus years as well. You lose
that's
who
it.
You
and
are.
It's really important what you're saying, because not exclusively, but the majority of these crimes are against younger women. But it's very important that we remember that survivors are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. These are our mums, our aunties, our sisters.
You know,
not that there's a hierarchy, but it's very interesting that it's very important that we highlight that these could be our granny that could be sitting there. It's inside her as well. And hopefully if that were the case, she would have access to beyond surviving. And, you know, it's just really interesting. You talked about that 7-year fight that you put up. And I presume there was an expectation on you, Kira. Sorry, and I'll leave you after this. There was an expectation on you by some, I'm sure, around you. Well, that's that then, so. You know, whereas I presume there's another void or vacuum that starts right there once that campaigning or activism or whatever, that fight is over. I presume from there onwards that this another chasm that everyone thinks, well, Kira's grand now because that's sorted.
Yeah. No, it's like, oh, now you can just move on with your life. And I'm like, what the hell? How? Like, what am I supposed to do? I don't have a job because I had to stop because I just couldn't mentally do it. And it's like, okay, you know, you're free now. And then you sit there and you're like, okay, so I fought 7 years for justice and none of the pain has gone away. It doesn't change anything. He's still coming out. He's still coming back to the same town as me. It doesn't really change. And you do have to be very grateful that you did get justice because so many people don't. But the pain remains.
It's not now
you can just move on with your life.
Exactly, of course. Yeah. And then you're keeping an eye on early release and all this kind of stuff as well. I'm sure it never goes away. Kira, thanks for your time. Well done for creating beyondsurviving.ie. And I've absolutely no doubt it's helped close on a couple of hundred already this year, and I'm sure many more into the future. Well done, Kira. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you
so
much.
I appreciate it. It's okay. Take care of yourself. Now, this week, thanks to our show sponsors, the Silver Tassie Hotel, you could win an indulgent Yonka Delight package at the Seascape Spa valued at €155. The luxurious 2.5-hour spa package includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel foot and back cleanse, a Yonka back massage and hydrating facial, pressure point face and scalp massage, warm oil foot massage, finished off with snooze room relaxation time and refreshment. Now, to be in with a chance of winning on Friday, simply answer this question. Which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, candy canes or fireworks? Okay, which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, candy canes, fireworks. Now, to be in with a chance of winning on Friday, text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. And between now and last year, I did actually go to the Silver Tassie Spa, and I have to say it was very nice. So you could be getting the full treatment there by simply entering that competition for free. Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000. Which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, candy canes or fireworks? Brendan Devaney joins us now because there's a real end of year feeling to the DL debate, Brendan.
Yes, indeed. When you go to the spa, do you sometimes not tell anybody?
No, geez, no. Unfortunately, that's, I couldn't do that, I'm afraid. No, I would be caught.
Sometimes I say to Tras, I had to go and test it out for you to make sure it was...
No, that's good. But then you put Tras in sometimes as well, too.
I do, right? For sure.
But yeah, it's funny. I haven't done it for ages, but I went to another one recently, not the Silver Tassie, and it began with my leg being pulled over the back of my head. I got the full tie, walking, jumping, absolutely everything. I did go back for more, but I was kind of naive. I didn't know this went on, and I also didn't know my leg could go in that direction.
Yeah, when somebody goes in kind of hard and fast like that, sometimes it does surprise you no matter what. Now, I've got some serious beatings over the years.
But I got used to it.
Very
strong
physios.
Like,
yes.
Amazing.
When you're not expecting it,
it's like the ankle lock. Do you remember Kurt Angle used to do the ankle lock in WWE? That's... Right, okay. So, hey, it's that time of year again. People are picking up their season tickets for next year.
That's it.
And listen... now's the time. I think you get first dibs. If we go deep in the championship, you get first dibs. So you get what? The McKenna Cup, the league, some of the league games anyway, and hopefully decent championship tickets if it gets to that. So there's a strong argument for the season ticket because we should do all right next year. I mean, there's nothing to suggest that this was a one and done.
No, I suppose, Greg, the two seasons, Ulster champions and back-to-back and another in semi-final and final. So, yeah, it's been a brilliant couple of years. Yeah, you know, I suppose the way the All-Ireland finished, probably, you know, we didn't do ourselves justice on the day and tactically we weren't ready for what Kerry brought. So that's left a lot of head scratching. But the new rules first year as well, Greg, it was such a kind of sea change, particularly from the way Team McDonagall play. So I think next year I'll tell the tale. But listen, we have a huge amount of talent and loads of players coming through as well.
So, and you'll be reflecting with people that know, of course. But, you know, I presume you'll be assessing too. Obviously, I've just referenced the Donegal seniors there. Obviously, the ladies, not just the senior scene, but also the club scene. And, you know, the club scene for the men as well, too. A lot to reflect on. I noticed in our conversations in 2025, since the new rules came in, Brendan, there was less frustration. You know, we were focusing more on, you know, what was happening on the pitch rather than what was not happening on the pitch, so to speak.
Yeah, I think for years, Greg, what happened was, and it probably came from a good place, particularly in Ulster, where coaching is very deep. And some it come from clubs initially up into counties then, where teams that weren't successful or were playing against better sides were trying to figure out how they could beat them. And that became a bit of a lockdown method. It became trying to stop a team playing rather than you going to play. So that's why when we had this, you know, the FRC coming in and to look at the game, it wanted to be flipped back in its head. Let's encourage teams to go and beat the other teams, not go and defend them. And I think that's what you're seeing now is the team is attack element now. You have to be able to post a high amount of scores, and now it's gone back to that. So that'll take us a while as well, Greg, to kick back in. And I think the big thing in that people notice a lot is one-on-one defending. Like when I was playing, you know, you had cornerbacks, fullbacks, you were lucky to get your hands on the ball. And when you did, they were all over you to get a shot away, to get around them. Took a bit of doing. Now you see a player and he's one-on-one and good luck. People just see how past people. So there's very little of those type of players. Obviously, we have Brendan McCool, who's brilliant at it and got his All-Star, and rightly so. But there's not that many of those players around. So I think that'll have to develop as well to weigh up versus some of the serious forward talent we have out there. And no wonder that's probably a big thing coaches are looking at the minute as well, along with wanting to be brilliant attackers. You've got to get your man-on-man defending sorted again.
You watched a lot of club games. There was some concern or questions as to how the new rules would work, you know, on a club pitch with a couple hundred people standing around and all that type of stuff. How was your assessment as to how the rules worked on the smaller scale?
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of people had fears for the referees get into this, Greg, because you had so many things to watch. And, you know, the county game, when you've got like the officials, the fourth official mic'd up, you've people, everyone's helping out. So I think because that was the start of it, it was brilliant, because I think everybody kind of got used to it very quick, what the rules were. And, you know, as we got into games then and the leagues, like it was tough, I think, on refs, particularly in leagues when they're on their own. When we got into the championship and you had, you know, your umpires and your linesmen, that it was a bit easier on them. But I think a lot of the players very quickly recognised what the rules were and they played their part too. Because, you know, any infringement, Greg, the likes of the 50-metre penalty net, it could be the difference between you winning and losing. So I think the players got the grips of it very quick, which probably made things a little bit easier. Not at the very start, I think, for refs, because it was like we were talking about all the rule changes, but there was like maybe 47 actual different changes technically for referees to get their head around. So fair play to all the refs. But yeah, I think it was a lot more seamless than people thought it would be.
Yeah, which is great. You've got a fantastic lineup tonight, reflecting on 25, looking forward to 26, right across the various disciplines under the GEA umbrella. Brendan Kilcoyne, of course, you couldn't do an end-of-year show without him. Michael McMullen from Gaelic Life, regular contributor. John Gilday, always good to have on. Maureen O'Donnell, good old safe pair of hands. Your right-hand man, Parag Hilfety, would have to be there. And sports journalist of the year, Ryan Ferry. That is some lineup.
Yeah, yes, indeed. The great lineup is right, Greg. And me and Brendan were in the Burn Road yesterday doing the under 21 semi final. And I've done a few challenging commentaries, Greg, at that one.
Why? What was so
We
challenging about it?
were inside a small trailer, but the wind and rain was basically you may as well have been standing outside. So any notes we had or anything we were trying to write just became soaked, and then your hands were that numb that you couldn't really do anything anyway. Somebody texts me about wiping the screen, I went to text them back. I couldn't get my phone open because it was soaked and my thumb was numbed out, but we got through it. But it was funny, the cameraman was down from home and he was panicking that it'll go the extra time was his biggest fear because he was soaked as well. But listen, well done to Four Masters. They came through against Glenswilly. Niamh Connell coming through on the other side. There was a ton of under 21 action at the
but
weekend.
But is also forms part of the conversation for 26 too, doesn't it? You know, if the truth be told, what's going on at that level?
Yeah, certainly. Greg, and again, just Four Masters. I've never seen anything like it. You know, they had 38 of a squad yesterday. Another seven players out of three teams. You know, in fairness to Glenswilly are a good team, good under 21 team, and like most teams, you've got, you know, strengths and weaknesses. Four Masters just look like every area of their pitch, they're so strong, so well
coached.
A great
story of what's happening there in terms of sort of the infrastructure, the coaching setup, how they're getting so many players, you know, vying for those effectively 15 starting spots. There's a story in it because whatever they're doing, they've started doing, you know, not in the medium term recently, and it is starting to produce. It's not like there's been an influx of 10,000 young GEA players into Donegal Town and surrounds.
See, the thing about coaching, Rick, I always think that when you look at the effect this has had now by organising all the different grades, and now they're kind of they're learning and they're getting better. And there's, if you take the under 21 from the players in from the minor championship that they won just a few weeks ago, and they're all learning from players a couple of years older, and it's just building a massive, I think, momentum switch now in club football. And you're right, I think coaching players individually, you know, if players have talent, you can affect it a bit, but really it's in them or it's not. But the collective is different then. And I think what happens is then those players training together every night is building them into a real force. And we have so many players.
Because there's a big soccer scene down there and a rugby scene too.
That's it.
You know, I mean, you've got Drumbar, I can't name them off the top of my head. But do you know what I mean? It's not like it's a free-for-all. So to be engaging so many young people, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's a long time since you won a senior championship, Greg. So it wasn't as if, you know, that you had that thing of they're looking up, they want to go on and win a senior. You know, Four Masters team wasn't at that level. Now, Greg, ominously, if these boys keep playing, good luck. But here's the thing, Greg, I suppose it's affecting ABVS in a brilliant way, and it's also affecting our county teams. Now, with my Donegal hat on, when I see these guys coming through, and I was looking at them yesterday, you know, straight away you're looking at maybe five or six potential. You're looking, right, I don't see any way that they're not going to play for Donegal seniors, which is, I suppose, one part of that outcome from this bit of a Four Masters revolution.
And now, we're going to see
Niamh
a lot
Connell
of...
were top class in their semi too. So,
who were,
say,
sorry?
Niamh Connell beat Chairman very convincingly too. So he probably got, it should make for a cracking final. Conditions permitted. Myself and Brendan will have to get the rain jackets. We need the wet gear out for this one. We're not prepared at all.
And just in terms of sort of the senior men's, the McKenna Cup is there too. You know, there are potentially the stars that we hopefully will be screaming on in the summer that potentially could come through that competition, because it seems the management are clear in that, you know, this is an opportunity here and they're not going to stand still and rest on the laurels, and there are chances for the right players to come through. Now, of course, they'd be very well known in their own clubs, but you know what I'm on about, sort of that broader county recognition.
Listen, it's important, Greg, obviously, to give players game time, but really, you'd see it at training anyway. The level at Donegal training, at when they're doing in-house stuff, you'll see if a player's ready or if he's not. Now, it's always such a massive thing for any lad to get a Donegal jersey on and play a senior game, and it will ask different questions of him. But Jim and his backroom team will see from training who's at the pitch and who needs to go on. But listen, it is one of those steps that you need to take. It probably gives you confidence yourself if you can get on the pitch, because that's the goal of every footballer in Donegal. They want to play for the senior team.
Yeah, for sure. Brendan Kilcoyne, Michael McMullen, John Gilday, Maureen O'Donnell, Park Hilferty, Ryan Ferry, and Brendan Devaney. Of course, we'll hear from those under 21 games at the weekend. Look forward to the final and so much more besides. Reflecting on 25, looking forward to 26. It's going to be a cracker, and it's live here on Highland just after 7.
Just after 7. Great. Can I put a shout out? No, this is a Highland shout. I was down in Ardragh during the week there, Thursday evening. No, I was down for Damien Diver's father's wake, Tom. Now, I love going down there, Ardragh, and it was lovely to see Damien. And no doubt when I done that house, but like going down the any wake house, you know, there's obviously, you know, sadness, emotion there, but there is that heartwarming kind of element. You meet people, and I met Damien's aunties. Now, boys or boys, did they love Highland Radio? So I was down there and I said, listen, I have to give you a mention when I come on, because I met Greta and Philomena and all love Highland, on Highland all the time. There was another lady there, another auntie of Damien's, and she was Mary Bartley. And she's a 24-hour a day Highland. She basically just leaves it on the whole time, Greg. So I had great crack. I
said, hello to Greta, Philomena and Mary.
Greta Philomena and Mary Bartley, and as I say, huge Highland fans. And I said, listen, you listen to Greg, whatever about the DL debate, I don't know if they'll be listening to me too much, Greg, but they'll be certainly listening to you. So listen, ladies, it was lovely to meet you, and of course, condolences, but great ladies.
I think you framed the Irish Wake perfectly there. It is, especially if a person has lived a full life, it is that opportunity, isn't it, to remember and mourn and celebrate and what have you. It's exactly why we do it. Brendan, thanks very much indeed. Looking forward to the show. Have a goodie. Take care of yourself. We'll see you soon. Greg, the name Sweet Nelly's Beach comes from how the rocks look in low tide when boats are passing. You can see the silhouette of a lady, hence the name. I must check that out. Didn't know that. A residence permit card has been found on the main street in Letterkenny. It's with the Gardaí, by the way. And it's in the name of a Wallace D'Souza Rocha. So it's handed in at the Garda station. So if you know Wallace, who may or may not be listening to us, their residence permit card is with the Gardaí in Letterkenny. Can you please cover the recent Men's Aid report that analysed over 7,000 contacts and where over 1,000 who reported domestic violence and abuse, 26%, reported parental alienation, for which the government have no definition yet for and still no consequences for in law? Please note, like all abuse, even rape, men and women can be victims, which we do all of the time. And I know where this is coming from, not specifically. We do that all the time. And unfortunately, predominantly, if we talk about assaults against a woman, and I'm speaking about a woman who was raped, I can't, in the course of that conversation, in fairness, them say, and men get raped too. I do hope you understand that. On the balance of things, of course, we recognise that domestic and sexual abuse and violence are perpetrated against men and women by men and women. But I'm speaking to a rape survivor, and it's just not the time, if you understand. And sorry if I'm sounding a little bit short, to stick that in there. And say, oh, men, this as well. I know that as well, by the way. I'm very conscious of that. Greg, I was very interested listening to Kira. I've been that soldier now for 60 years and many, many times down the years in different forms by other people. I've never talked about it. No one wants to hear it, really. The only way I could cope with the many instances was learn to forgive and help to get rid of the pain. I'm very sorry to hear what you've endured, and that is an endurance. And maybe still, even at this point, you might benefit from chatting to other people who would have an acute understanding of what you've experienced. Let me see. Re-assisted dying. If assisted dying becomes legal in Ireland, will it also become another opt-out issue eventually? I mean, there's nothing to indicate that that's the case. I mean, if you are of the view that society could end up like that, I mean, you never know. But I would certainly hope that that's not the case. And I think really that if that's the direction any country was going to be, they wouldn't necessarily slow drip it either. They would just say, right, this is the way it is going to be. I was reading a court case during the week where the solicitor for the defendant kept on about a girl having drink taken and the judge seemed to think it was okay, which again, I don't understand. That's like saying because someone is... it's not like saying, sorry, I have to be really careful not to be clumsy here, But that's like saying if someone leaves the car open, it's okay to steal it, or you know. And as I say, I'm only just I'm not comparing crimes, but I mean, obviously, you know, that's not the case. We know that, right? So why would we think that just because someone might be in a vulnerable position, and it could be that their drink was spiked and they never made that decision, or they could have just mishapped. Like everyone has, we've all done it. It doesn't mean that anyone should be able to do that to them, or it could be an excuse to do so. It wouldn't be an acceptable excuse in any other crime. Why would it be that? Sorry to be jumping from one issue to the other, but it's just the nature of how things have been coming in. Lots of you texting in on, well, a number of you texting in relation to cash. Remember when the NCT said they were stopping taking cash and there was uproar and it didn't happen? How come when we go in to renew our driving licence, they don't take cash? How can this be? Thank you. Well, it shouldn't be. Especially an arm of the state, effectively. Greg, I'm puzzled. Why is our government installing more cash machines, ATMs, when the use of cash is being phased out worldwide and everything else in our lives is going to be mandatory digital ID? Well, you know, Simon Harris obviously is trying to he's trying to counteract maybe some negativity towards him in recent times. They probably know that cash and access to cash affects a lot of people, or people are bothered by it. Not a lot of people, but certainly a noisy amount of people are, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. So he gets it out on a Monday morning, and it's part of sort of making out that, you know, he's listening to you. Please can you highlight the parking at Letterkenny University Hospital? There are containers. I got this one on Friday or Thursday as well. There are containers arriving daily and eliminating parking. It was really bad as it was staff are coming in extra early and can't move their cars for breaks. People have appointments. They must be so frustrated. Can you highlight this, Greg, please? I'm doing that again. I don't believe we got any follow-up on that last time I mentioned it, but if it is an issue or a concern, please let us know and we can chase it up more. On to GAA. We are second favourites for SAM 2026. The outsiders tag I'd probably prefer. Me too. I don't want to, you know, we don't want to be going into games where effectively, other than the favourites, were favourites. That doesn't suit us, does it? Players now have all the luxuries. I remember getting lifts to matches, even on the back of a Honda 50 and togging out under the elements. Are they better now than they were then? Fitter, yes, but skills, I'll say no. Interesting. But that's the whole, you know, the if you could get a team from your era to play a team from this era, what would the score be? You know, it's like boxing, isn't it? Muhammad Ali versus Tyson Fury, who'd win that? These are questions we can debate and have a bit of fun talking about, but we can never answer. A small gold purse has been handed into Lidl near the Polestar roundabout in Letterkenny. The manager has it. It was dropped in the car park there. So were you in Lidl or perhaps Lidl? I'm not sure which one it is. Your purse, which you dropped, a small gold purse, has been handed in and it's in and on the premises. You were hearing on the news, new figures from the Irish Road Safety Authority reveal there are 394,000 learner permit holders now on our roads in Ireland. And to the end of September 25, almost 10,000 of them are in Donegal alone. Ger Hyland is Irish Roads Haulage Association president and joins us on the programme now. And I suppose, you know, your members are keen, like all of us, to ensure safety out there. That's a lot of learner drivers. Now, how many of them are driving or just hold the permit? How many of them are driving unaccompanied, etc.? Do we know any of those details, Ger?
We don't. But we do know that there's 394,000 learner permits out there. That equates to one in every 10 vehicles on the road being driven on a learner permit.
I can't imagine they're all waiting on a test either.
Well, probably not. But if they're not, they should be. And that's down to the management of the learner permits by the RSA, that there should be a limit, that if you reach a limit and you haven't done your test, well, then your permit is taken from you.
Why do you think it's so important that the likes of the Irish Road Haulage Association enter this conversation, Ger?
Well, last March, we couldn't get our learner drivers tested because the testers were so scarce on the ground. It was taking so long to get them tested. We still feel it's the same thing today with almost 13,000 more learner permits out there now than there was last March. So when we rose this last March, there was 30 other organisations came out between cycling, pedestrian, whatever, and they said that the RSA, in their view at the time, was not fit for purpose. We're of that same opinion today. It's down to mismanagement. They said they were going to have weekend testers, they were going to add more training facilities, expand testing hours. We're not seeing that. And it'll be very interesting when your listenership starts ringing in today to see whether they're finding that the test times have reduced. Don't believe they have.
No, especially here in Donegal and in Ashone most notably. Also, too, you know, unfortunately, you know, people might say, well, why are you focused on learner drivers? Well, this is the data that's with us at the moment. But also, Ger, we do see that in terms of serious and fatal road traffic collisions, learner drivers make up 10% of the driving population potentially, but are a far greater percentage of, unfortunately, those involved in serious or fatal road traffic collisions.
Absolutely. And look, it seems to be the fatal road accidents mainly are at night on rural roads, and how you counteract this, I don't know, but certainly it'll have to come down to enforcement.
All right, Ger, listen, thank you so much for your time. That is Ger Hyland there, who is the Irish Road Haulage Association president. And as I say, the one thing I'm not 100% sure clear in these statistics is how many people with learner drivers are actually on the with learner permits are actually on the road. So there are 9,949 learner permit holders in the county, but are they actually driving or what have you? But anyway, new laws coming in that you can only hold one for a certain amount of time before you eventually are going to have to do a driving test. Right, I just want to mention something. I heard Lee Gooch mention it a little earlier on, and it comes into this programme. And it is the Christmas School Showcase, and it's coming to a school near you, and it's in association with our friends at Callaghan's Electrical. So you're asked to get ready for a holy jolly or a holly jolly adventure as we kick off the Christmas School Showcase. So we're on the festive mission to spread joy, laughter and a touch of Highland magic to schools right across our community. So you can nominate your school to be part of our Christmas Showcase. All you need to do is send us the name and address of your school, the number of pupils, what your students would like to perform on the day, for an example, a Christmas song, a short scene from your school play, or indeed a festive poem. Email your nominations to christmas@highlandradio.com. That's christmas@highlandradio.com by the 10th of December. And your school could be one of the two we visit for live links on the 15th of December. And I'm really looking forward to that because Lee Gooch and the team will be broadcasting live links from one of the successful schools into this programme. And it always is lovely because that's, for me, when it really starts landing, when you see the kids having fun and singing and the tambourines and all that kind of stuff. And we did this or a form of it previously, and it was fantastic. And also a school will be chosen to broadcast into Around the Northwest. That's John Breslin's show. And it's your opportunity to showcase the incredible spirit of your school to the entire Highland community. Not only that, though, the chosen school will also receive a Samsung tablet from Callaghan's Electrical and selection boxes for the whole school. So you can nominate your school now and let the Christmas School Showcase begin. And you know what? You could potentially plan something specific, or it could be part of your school play or whatever it might be. A lot of schools now don't do plays as such. They seem to be doing variety things. I'm not sure if the tradition of the school plays as it once was, but anyway. So christmas@highlandradio.com, nominate your school by the 10th of December, and hopefully you'll feature on this show and the Around the Northwest show, two separate schools. You also get a beautiful Samsung tablet and selection boxes, one for everyone in the audience, so to speak. Right, just before we go, I put in 14 energy panels in my home in Greencastle. I have a bill of €102. I know that there's less sun at this time of year, but this is ridiculous because it makes the battery and panels not viable. The ESB was supposed to give me 21 cent per unit towards the bill. I spent 6,000 on the system and I'm not getting the benefits of it. I'm only one person in a house using very little energy. Well, 102 euro is kind of about the standing charges. You know, maybe 20 quid more, but still, maybe it's not the saving that you were looking for. Any views on that or anything else, contact us, whether you're listening to us live or the podcast, or just watching back.